Hello and welcome to Camera Central Podcast. Today I have Raj from Canon. So talk about yourself, introduce yourself a little bit more, and yeah.
Hi, yeah, I'm Raj. I work for Canon, or with Canon, along various different projects, from content creation, tutorials, event management, and all sorts. And it's a really fun job. I really like it. And we do really great products as well. So, and I'm also a photographer, cool. So I get to use the product doing what I do. Which is great.
The Camera Central Podcast is available both on Spotify and YouTube, so make sure you like, follow and subscribe if you want to see more. Let's get back into it, shall we?
Yeah, well, I assume that helps quite a bit as well, because, you actually have a passion for what you do. I think First things first, can we just, mention how amazing his, office game is? Because it just looks absolutely stunning. Just look at it. It's it looks really chill. I like it. Sorry, probably not the best way to start a podcast.
I make bespoke home offices for people, so this is kind of my
do
other
you actually
thing.
Do? Yeah, okay, there you go. A little plug in there. That's actually really cool. A really cool thing to do on the side as well, I guess. So first things first, let's go into kind of what you're currently using in general. I'm guessing it's a Canon. What do you like about it?
I'm currently using an R5. I did have two R5s, but I'm now down to one. I like to use the R6 Mark II a lot, so I actually found I didn't use both R5s very much. I don't own an R6 Mark II. I use my work one, which is a perk of the job. But it is a camera that my partner now has because I loved it so much, and she was using it a bit, and it's kind of just edges the R5 a little bit in terms of focusing performance, and actually you don't always need 45 megapixels. I'm finding that I don't miss having all the resolution all the time.
No, for sure. It's one of those things that I'm genuinely surprised at, nine times out of ten, because, for a long time I was running a camera that just had 12 megapixels, and, it's not the best in terms of, being able to blow up massively, but it produced a decent amount of quality. Yeah. I feel like the 24 and, around that kind of, mark is a good kind of mid-range to have just in general. You don't necessarily need a massive jump in megapixels all the time.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And the benefits in terms of low light performance is and speed as well. Like the R6 Mark II is just a bit faster. I do a bit of wildlife photography, so for that stuff, the R6 Mark II just outperforms the R5 by some way.
So is it just wildlife photography you do, or do you do other forms as well? What's your main kind of mantra within the creative environment?
I call myself a portrait photographer, but I have found myself doing more wildlife photography in the last few years than I have. It's a bit of a mix, really. But I do weddings with my partner. We have a wedding business. I do commercial portraiture and sort of stylized portraiture myself, and I help on wildlife tours and guiding and that sort of stuff. So I do a bit of a mix of stuff, and. I really love
doing. What would you say you enjoy the most? I mean, it kind of follows into what you were just about to say. It's like, which one do you kind of enjoy the most out of all that you've just mentioned?
I like doing the stylized portraiture stuff. So I like to bring in a lot of lighting. I like to do stuff where I've got a bit more control and time, and have a bit more scope to be a bit more creative. And I find I can do stuff that perhaps just. It would have been a bit harder to do in the moment, and I can create scenes. Yeah. I love doing stuff like that. That's really fun.
Oh, that's really cool. You're going to have to send some photos and we'll put them over the top.
Yeah.
Because I do believe, this is going to be coming from someone that mostly does stuff out and about in nature, or you just using natural light. I do want to do more kind of crafted stuff, but with that, I need to actually have a car to be able to do it. but the big thing is, I think when it comes to using actual lighting to be able to do it, you can really be a little bit more crafty, create some more interesting scenes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you know Jake Hicks?
Yeah.
In particular? Yeah, Jake Hicks. Fantastic kind of flash photographer, and when it comes to people that can set up light, it's you can if you have the way if you understand it properly, you can really do some absolutely crazy stuff.
So Jake, I don't know him personally, but I've seen his work over the years, and he does a lot of stuff with bright colors and you know that sort of stuff, right? My approach to flash is more is quite different. Like I like to bring in a lot of lighting, but I try and do it, I approach it more like film sets. So I try and make it look like it isn't lit, but it very much is. So it's sort of stylized, but like you're almost
Have you got a site?
Yeah. So it's rajk.photo.
Rajk.photo. So I guess that kind of follows into, so like, why do you shoot Canon personally? Is it just because you work there? I guess you kind of have to say good things in general, but the other side is like, why do you think people today should be choosing Canon over all of the other manufacturers that are out there at the moment?
It's a good question. And I mean, I'm of the opinion that there are no bad cameras out there, right? Like, you could throw a stick into a camera shop and come out with whatever camera it lands on, and you're going to get something that's pretty decent. For me, it comes down to what you're wanting to do with it and how that camera performs across that and everything else you do. And I do a lot of stuff, so I need something that does like a really good performance in, you know, as I said, like studio portrait stuff, as well as wildlife photography in difficult, dark locations. I do stuff in Scotland a lot. So that's, and it needs to be able to do this in fairly extreme conditions as well. You know, I'm out in the rain a lot. And so I need something that can do all of that. And I did used to shoot Nikon when before I worked at Canon. And it was a good camera, and it, you know, I loved the sensor, but it wasn't capable of all the other stuff, like, you know, doing video and and the focusing performance that you're getting out of the Canons, and the color reproduction. So for me, color reproduction, focusing performance is unreal, and being able to do everything in one camera. Like, I could quite happily, if I didn't feel the need to have a backup camera, do everything with just an R5, you know, and that includes all the video work I do, doing sort of switching between video and stills very quickly as well on location in the moment. I can do that with the R5, and it's a menu system and lighting system that all works really well together. It's just, I found it all to be so much more reliable than anything else I've used in, and sort of versatile. That's kind of why I ended up with it.
I think that's something.
I think
there's something to be said about Canon, is that is like, when people choose cameras, it's good to find something that is reliable for them.
Yeah.
In every situation, because like, as soon as a camera starts breaking down in terms of like it, you know, certain performance areas which you need it to cover, you know, it's quite hard to kind of recover from that. And you know, Canon's color reproduction, the autofocus, and you know, the build quality, and you know, being able to shoot in any situation is a big reason why people go for them. And they are reliable in that.
Yeah, and I love the lenses. Like, there's a lot to it. Like, I really like the lenses, and there's lenses that are, you know, sometimes with some lenses they get too perfect and you don't get the character, and you kind of want some interest. And Canon are very clever with that. Like the particularly the 1.2 lenses, the 85 1.2, they've still got character, and they've still got, you know, they're still very beautiful lenses to use. So if you get really nerdy with it, there's so much to it that I really like about using the Canon stuff. Like, it's more than just the spec sheet. It's like, it's a whole package.
A big part of why you like the Canon is the fact it shoots video as well. How important do you reckon it is for cameras that are coming out to improve the video quality? Do you reckon there is much left to improve? Because, you know, as standard, we all stream 4K, right? Do you think there is an importance behind higher resolutions than 4K?
To some extent, there's always going to be a sort of big numbers game with the sort of resolution stuff. And, you know, there is benefits. There are obviously benefits to a sector of the industry for, you know, shooting 8K RAW and all the rest of it. And even bigger, I think 12K is coming in as a standard now. And like, it seems to be shifting that way. For the general consumer, and for most people like you and I, we don't need to be shooting 8K all the time, do we? It's sort of impractical from a storage perspective, and actually from an editing perspective, it's sort of more than we need. But having the option there and the capability there for when you do need to do it really allows you to sort of hone in on having one camera that is a solution for a lot of situations. And as a commercial photographer or a commercial content creator, I'm going to say, rather than photographer, because so much of the industry is going down this hybrid route, right? You're expected to do both things. I often, you know, if I'm at a job, kind of ask if I can factor in video. And it's, I find it personally very difficult to split my brain into for having to doing video of a very high quality and photography to a very high degree at the same time. I find very difficult, but some people are much better than that than I am. But having a camera that is capable of doing that, you know, being in any situation, if your client's requirements are that you deliver in 8K, you don't have to hire in new kit, you know, you've got it already. And I think that for that reason it's there. I don't know how much there is to improve. I'm sure, you know, in terms of processing power, that's where it kind of comes into. It's less the image quality at this point. You know, noise reduction will help as technology gets better, but it's really like how many frames per second can that processor eke out of that sensor? You know, it's like how many frames per second do you really need most of the time? But like,
well, that's it. It does feel like it's getting a little bit superfluous in a lot of situations where it's like, oh, we now do 120 frames per second in
8K raw,
20 bits, you know, all of this, which sounds really great and all that, but like, do you really need it? It's just like,
how many hardwares do you have in your house?
It's one of those things that I think the best way to look at it is like, you could by all means buy a camera, an entry level like 600D DSLR, and get great images out of it. Having something a little bit higher spec, higher quality, gives you options. And, you know, keeps you updated, because, you know, a big thing about switching to mirrorless is actually having the ability to adapt a myriad of different lenses, and especially when it comes to the old Canon FD lenses as well. I've had a lot of fun, like, you know, doing that, and you have great RF glass in general. Of course, you recently using that retrospect is that you're starting to open up the mount a little bit as well, which is interesting. I don't know how much we can talk about that with you. Kind of what's your opinion on, you know, having other lens manufacturers start releasing lenses?
Yeah, it's interesting. So it's on the APS-C RF at the moment, and I think it's quite interesting. You know, it's nice to see people have options. You know, it's the same thing, and I often think that competition is sort of drives innovation, and you know, and what's nice about the RF mount is that it was sort of the whole system was built for the RF mount. It wasn't built for the cameras. It was built for the lenses. Right, the whole system was designed around having lenses that were better quality, and allowing us to have that flexibility in terms of options and innovation that allows us to create things that were never created before. It is sort of quite exciting. Inevitably, we're going to see quite a lot of lenses from the other brands now that they can do it. I think it's good. I think it's good for competition.
I think it's genuinely good, because, you know, you are seeing other brands trying to combat, you know, the cheaper lifestyle of like the Sigma lineup and everything. But the other side of that is, and I think this is the thing that's really good for Canon in general, it lowers the barrier for entry to some more interesting glass. And at the end of the day, most people will end up switching over to the Canon L range or, you know, the RF lenses, because they know they're always going to find quality there. But in terms of sign out, I think it's only really a good thing, especially when it comes to the APS-C lineup anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And just on that, on the sort of RF lenses, what matters to myself with something like that is consistency. Particularly with Canon lenses across the range, is that they design and build them and create the glass themselves. They have, I don't know how many different types of glass that they've designed and manufactured themselves. And it's color consistency. So when you shoot with an R100 with a one of the sort of cheaper APS-C lenses, you're getting similar colors and sort of consistent color reproduction as compared to an R5 with the sort of higher end lenses and 24-105 L lenses. It's really quite close, and that allows you just to know what you're going to get, you know, like you just have a realistic expectation of what the colors are going to look like. And if you're working with multiple cameras across and multiple lenses, what you come out of from a shoot is going to be consistent. Like I can shoot with one with a 24-105, sorry, one with a 7200 and one with a 51.8 non-L on the other.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get similar a look out of both.
What was your favourite lens from last year then? So you did actually release quite a few lenses and a number of ones we actually covered on the channel. I was actually really interested in the 200 to 800.
Yeah.
That was really interesting.
Yeah.
A really interesting release from you guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, we managed to get some really cool shots out of it.
So you've played with it more than I have.
Not an L lens either. Have you not played with it? I thought you were ready to go with it doing wildlife, see?
Yeah, they are in such high demand. the samples that we have.
Oh, they actually.
So we've got a couple of samples that are around, and I've handled it, but I haven't had a chance to take it out and play with it properly.
Okay.
I'm really looking forward to that because, you know, arguably you could get pretty close with a 100 to 500 at 1.4 times, but the flexibility in one lens. And at that price point, it is quite impressive. We were all kind of a bit like, well,
yeah,
that's,
really good.
That's cheaper than we expected. I'd love to give it a go. You tell me how you found it. How did you find it?
No, it was really good. Well, I thought I found it excellent. I liked the fact that it had the ability to use the 2x teleconverter, so you actually could get like up to 1600 mil, or you could go there again to 2400? No.
With a 1.4?
Not math, just math. Math is hard, man. It would have been about 2,000 if you had the APS-C on there.
I see. Yeah.
So yeah. So you know, just having that range for doing wildlife photography.
It's
I think
basically a telescope at that point.
Excellent. It's basically 100%. Because when we did the lens, we did this really cool shot of literally a portrait that I've been thinking of doing for a while. But finding something that actually could do it. In terms of a lens, it's like something I've been trying to find for a little while at that point. And then this came out and it was kind of like the opportunity to really shoot something a little bit interesting.
Yeah.
So the shot was where I effectively framed a model inside of the gates to the castle, but the model was like halfway down the street. And then I was at the other end of the street shooting the model.
Cool.
So like the bokeh is literally this like archway, which I thought was quite cool.
Yeah. Are you really a long lens for that compression for that, don't you? Really?
Yeah. No. So it's like super compressed. And, it was one of my favorite shots that I've done, to be fair, in terms of like technically,
nice.
I guess, cause I've been trying to do it. It was freaking so awkward to get the photo though, because I was on the phone to Tyler trying to get this shot going, and then people would keep walking in front of the shot.
Of course.
God, it was madness. It was crazy.
Have you had a play with the 24-105 2.8 yet?
Yeah, 24-105 2.8. And I guess that's a really good kind of like thing we can talk about as well, to be fair, because at the moment, I think because, you know, camera industry has been going for such a long time, there's become these standards of lenses. So your 50s, your 24-70s, your 7200s, you know, there's these standards and, you know, it's great to have those standards.
Mm.
But what's interesting is lens manufacturers are starting to go off the side and go like, we need to create something a little bit quirkier, a little bit out there. And do a unique focal length or a unique aperture combination, you know.
Going rogue.
But like, for example, you guys have the 28 to 70, the F2, you know.
Yeah.
Crazy fast lens. And now you've got the 24-105, excellent F2.8, whilst also keeping it light and still usable for the most part. I think that's what I found quite impressive about it. What do you think of it?
I had to really eat my words. I'd often speak to customers and say, they'd be like, why don't they do it as a 2.8? I really want a 2.8. And I'd be like, well, yeah, but it'd be very expensive and very heavy. Like, it'd be massive. This thing would surely be massive. And then we did it, and it wasn't massive. It's obviously larger than the 24-105 F4, but it's totally usable, It's totally manageable weight and size, and it's... I really like it, and I actually quite like that we've got proper iris rings, aperture rings on them as well.
Yeah.
It seems to be like a bit of a thing. I think they're going to do The hybrid market is where that's kind of going for, and it's quite exciting. Yeah. You know, I think that's going to be a very interesting area for a lot of photographers and a lot of videographers, but a lot of photographers, because it's giving them options that they would never have had before. Yeah. Even if it's even if you consider yourself absolutely adamantly not video, you know, the video sector of the market that's pushing these stills things is giving us options that we wouldn't have had otherwise, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, learning from each other, you know, not everything's going to be measured in T-stops or whatever all the time, that doesn't need to matter, you know. But I agree, as the sort of, like, the synchronization of the two sides, because, like, this is going to sound like a massive kind of, like, out there statement, but it's almost to the point where, like, photography and video is basically dead, and now you've got the content creator, that is what people are just in general.
Yeah.
It's not basically dead, that's probably literally just for short to be like, oh. But yeah, controversial. But no, there is the merging of this. There's no, oh, I'm a videographer or I'm a photographer. And, you know, I think I'm probably one to, you know, say about this, because, you know, I consider myself mainly a videographer. That's what I did day in, day out before I started doing the YouTube for Camera Center UK. And now I'm very much a content creator, and I think everyone really is a content creator.
Yeah.
You do have people in industry that are like, I'm a cinematographer, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, I've ended up doing stop motion for some clients. Like, it's such a bizarre mix of stuff you end up doing, and every time you kind of come into something else that someone else wants, you encounter new novel challenges that you wouldn't have come into without doing that, and that's something like, that was a long time ago, and I've noticed that a lot of the cameras now have the capabilities and the sort of they've been refined for all of these niches, like stop motion stuff. There's stuff in the cameras that are designed for that.
Yeah.
But when you kind of come into buying it as just a photographer, you think, why am I paying for all of these extra features? But they all lead into the same thing, right? It's all, the process is capable of doing all this stuff, so it can all, you know, you're benefiting from that. Yeah, I think it's quite interesting.
Oh, yeah, no, and as you know, as the creative industry goes forward into the future, it's going to be interesting to see kind of like what comes out from it all. I do miss the days of where like cameras had a little bit more quirkiness to them. Oh, great, we're running out of time. We've got 10 minutes left. But yes, cool. So should we just, is there anything else you want to add there?
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I think we've had a pretty good conversation overall. This is a question that I ask anybody at the end of the podcast. We've only got 10 minutes left on the Zoom call because, you know, fun. If somebody's looking to start within the creative industry, you know, you've had a lot of experience being a wedding photographer and everything else in between, what would be your advice to them in order for them to get going, you know, get started?
Two things. I mean, it's nice to look at trends and sort of imitate others to get practice and learn. But find your style, I would say, is the main thing. Like, just hone what you want to do and do that a lot. And stick to your eye. Like, the trends thing is good in the internet. If you want to chase sort of the likes and the social media side of things. But if you want to find a niche that people come to you for, you got to keep to a look, and that would be probably my advice. And assist people, and you know, just get practice, a lot of practice.
Yeah. The other side of it is, I honestly think there's kind of like a big push behind being yourself these days.
Yeah, because, absolutely. Authenticity.
You know, stories sell a lot more. You know, finding a unique style. But when you said not connect to trend, not go trend chasing.
Yes.
If you try to be unique, try and be yourself, I think that's one of the most important things, you know, that people should try and be and try and do.
Yeah.
Because I think you end up becoming a little bit more successful with it, even just feeling better for it for yourself or, you know, along those ways, shape and forms, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
but anyway...
The irony of it is, you know, don't chase trends. But weirdly, the trend at the moment is authenticity. So do chase that trend.
It is the trend at the moment is authenticity. You're quite right. And it's weird that is, you know, the trend that, you know, don't go trend chasing, but chase authenticity. But I think it's telling because we're sold something 24/7 looking at our phones. You know, we're sold this perspective of, you know, constantly buy new gear, or, you know, check out this hose with the AI voice on it that can wash anything. That was one that I had today. I was just like, what? Why? Why? I think it's because I'm moving house soon or something like that. It's just deciding to be like, oh, they need cleaning implementation. I was just like, thanks. Yeah. But, you know, and I think the reason why authenticity sells at the moment is in stark reaction to the fact that we live in an environment where we are constantly sold stuff, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is a podcast on my camera shop, so, you know, there's no irony in what I'm saying in the slides. But, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we get into existential crisis mode. Let's
get... Don't read into it too much. But overall, really nice catching up with you.
And you.
Are you coming to Wales and West this year?
I am, yeah, I'll be there.
Amazing. Yeah. So I'll see you there. Probably do a little interview with you again. Hopefully see some more stuff from Canon whilst we're there. I'm really excited. Either way. Yeah. To be fair.
Yeah.
And, you know, Wales and West, book your ticket now down below.
We're all there. Yeah, it's going to be great fun.